man's logic was, or whether logic had anything to do with it. Why was he so sure there would be money in this? If the message just said, "Hi, here are some pretty pictures in return," and gave up nothing more revolutionary than what had been given it, which was what the changeling and most of its co-workers expected, then how was Poseidon going to make a dime off it? T-shirts and action figures? When the changeling broached that question to Naomi, she squinted and put a finger to her lips. "Ours is not to reason why," she whispered. The number of ones and zeros was 31,433, which was the product of a prime and a prime squared, 17 times 43 times 43. So it might be 17 squares, each 43 dots and dashes on a side, or 43 rectangles, 17 by 43, arranged in various ways. Or just one line of 31,433 bits of information. Their computers could marshal powerful decryption tools, and no doubt if the government got into it, they would have much more sophisticated ones. But the assumption had to be that this was not a hidden message, at least not hidden on purpose. This was where intuition came in, or maybe plain dumb luck. 20 people were working on it, and they had 20 large flat screens and 5 1.5-meter cubes for visualizing in 3 dimensions. Find something that looks like a coherent message, or at least part of one. The rooms they worked in looked like crossword puzzle nightmares, white and black squares and cubes in constant chaotic dance. The changeling felt something. It was not logic, certainly not numbers, but a sense that the thing really was trying to be clear. It was just so inhuman that humans couldn't get it. Maybe the changeling had become too human itself to get it. People hungry for the million were grinding themselves down on coffee and speed and no sleep, so Russ declared a snow day. Everybody stay home and sleep or otherwise relax. Jack had to go along with it. After 5 days, people were getting a little crazy. The changeling spent its snow day walking up the hill with Russ. They agreed not to talk about the project at all. Up the hill was the steep 4-kilometer hike to Vailima, the mansion where Robert Louis Stevenson had spent his last years. Russ had been there a couple of times, and so was native guide to Ray. The changeling probably knew more about Robert Louis Stevenson's writing than everybody else on the project combined, by virtue of its English major some lives before, but it played dumb and let Russ educate it. It decided that it had read Treasure Island, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and nothing else by Stevenson. So as they trudged up the hill, Russ told her the stories of Kidnapped and the Master of Ballantrae, and some of the complex story of Stevenson's life on the island. The changeling knew most of it, but was a good listener. How the great writer had come out here seeking relief from tuberculosis, and found not a cure, but a relaxed and relaxing style of life. He, or his wife, Fanny, imported a lot of things that made Vailima a transplanted corner of civilized Scotland. Fine linens and china, a good piano that was rarely played, walls lined with books, even a fireplace, in case the Earth changed its orbit. It would be a better story if Stevenson had written any of his classics here, but those were behind him. He did write 5 books and threw great parties for the Samoans as well as the Anglos and Europeans. He found people to love, a condition that Fanny may have been resigned to before they moved, and his last years were full of joy and ease. The changeling was not seducing Russ. It was just being there, but that was sufficient. Russ had never been immune to attractive women, and he was at a stage in his life that was like Stevenson's, minus wife and illness, plus good genes and all the benefits of 21st century medicine. His body and mind were young enough that a liaison with a 30-year-old woman was not ridiculous to either of them. As they pounded uphill together, sweating and laughing, stopping for a beer at a little joint, the difference in age became a novelty rather than a barrier. They walked through Stevenson's mansion, shoes off, with a teenaged Samoan guide who hadn't read much of the author's work, but knew everything about daily life in the mansion, and talked as if Stevenson had just stepped out for a while, perhaps riding down to Apia to see what the latest freighter had brought in, or joining the native workers in farm chores or clearing.